A winter storm shows the impact of reduced DOT snow plowing in Haines. And the Haynesboro Assembly debates whether state parks should take over the Chilkoot River Road. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. A winter storm hit Haines last weekend, covering the town in about 15 inches of snow. Skiers and sledders rejoiced, but drivers did not. Many roads that normally would have been plowed in the past were left covered. That's because the State Department of Transportation has scaled back its snow plowing budget. Haines DOT maintenance foreman Matt Boron says this first snowstorm happened at the worst time possible, Friday night.
Since the storm hit on a weekend, that's like the worst case scenario because we have Saturday and Sunday where we really, you know, don't work.
Boron says DOT is not allowing overtime plowing on most roads in Haines.
In the past, we've just been Johnny on the spot and we like to take care of everybody and everything. But we mainly, you know, we're only able to concentrate on the Haines Highway and in the airport and pretty much had to let most of everything else go.
DOT ranks roads between level 1 and 4 based on the volume of traffic. Boron says this winter they're only allowed to work overtime to plow higher level roads like the highway. But it was hard for him to stick to those marching orders.
We actually did, after we got done doing the highway, we did make a quick pass around. I think we went around just the small tracks area. We did go around that one time just because it was so bad. But even that, I really wasn't supposed to do.
Residents who live out Mud Bay say that road did not get much plowing over the weekend.
Really ruddy in single lane. I mean, there wasn't a lot of traffic, so, but whenever you did run into someone, you had to pull over into the deeper snow, and most of the cars are plowing, you know, like the snow was so high in the middle that you're plowing all the way in.
Renee Hoffman lives at 6 Mile Mud Bay. She is worried about what would happen if an ambulance or fire truck needed to respond to an emergency in her neighborhood. If the roads aren't plowed, it could impact response times. As for borough-owned roads, Public Facilities Director Brad Ryan says his crews did their usual amount of clearing over the weekend. He said the reduced plowing from DOT didn't seem to impact borough plowing.
But it didn't impact our routes, really, to speak of. They were out early on Friday when the storm came in, and we plowed late and then plowed Saturday morning, chose to wait for the storm just for efficiency's sake to kind of end.
Ryan says he heard from people who were surprised at how much DOT did plow. But Boron says there was definitely a difference, and he doesn't see DOT being more flexible on the plowing limitations. The department's budget was cut by more than $30 million this year. Boron says communities around the state are seeing more restrictions in snow response.
It's terrible. I mean, it's not the way that I've ever done business. And my wife drives on these roads. I drive on these roads. I actually live on a Class 4 road that I'm not allowed to plow. So you could even say, how am I even supposed to get to work because I'm not allowed to plow my own street?
He says if there are more weekend snowfalls, people will have to drive cautiously and, for some streets, wait until Monday for clear conditions. The National Weather Service in Juneau forecasts scattered snow showers the next few days, rain on Friday, and snow Saturday and Sunday. The Tourism Advisory Board asked the Haynesboro Assembly last week to support handing management of the Chilkoot Corridor Road over to Alaska State Parks. The road is currently managed by the Alaska Department of Transportation. After much discussion, the Assembly voted to send the proposal to the Commerce Committee for consideration. With increased vehicular and foot traffic on the road during the months when bears are feeding in the river, there's a growing safety concern. KHNS's Jillian Rogers has more.
If the road gets handed off to state parks, the hope is that enforcement and monitoring of bear viewers will increase to help ease the chaos that ensues each summer. Bear enthusiasts flock to the shores of the Chilkoot River each season to get a glimpse of the Bruins feeding on salmon. As well, anglers use the spot heavily. There have been some close calls and some unhealthy bear-human interactions, which local bear advocates say will no doubt lead to a mauling if nothing is done to uphold order. But with that potential benefit comes a possible downside. Here's Assemblymember George Campbell.
In my discussions with Parkwood Superintendent Mike Eberhardt today, one of the things that he stated to me is that if the state parks takes over management of this road, it will no longer be a public access road, meaning they're going to put a gate on that, and anytime they deem that it's either too crowded or they don't want to maintain the road or there's not funding to take care of it, the gate swings closed, it's locked, and we will not have access up there.
Tourism Director Leslie Ross said she and Eberhardt discussed the fact that there aren't enough local state park employees for the monitoring needed at Chilkoot during the peak season. But she said she plans on trying to rally local businesses, nonprofits, and the borough to drum up funding to hire someone dedicated to the corridor. Ross added that DOT and state parks would love for the borough to take over the road. After the laughing stopped, borough manager Dave Sosa responded.
There is a likelihood that there's going to be a push to transition the road over to the borough if it goes to state parks. Now, we do not have to accept it, but that is something we do need to consider.
Campbell suggested the resolution to approve the letter of support written by the Tourism Board go to committee. He said the public should have a chance to hear the plan and say their piece. Assembly members Diana Lapham and Mike Case opposed the motion. They questioned what the Commerce Committee could do with such little information. The motion to send the letter to Commerce Committee passed 4-2 with Lapham and Case opposed. Later in that meeting, the issue of skier days came up again. At last month's assembly meeting, heliski operators appealed the number of days they were given. The borough manager and assembly decided that Alaska Heliskiing would get 1,450 days, Alaska Mountain Guides would get 400 days, and Southeast Alaska Backcountry Adventures would get 900. Campbell suggested last week that each permit holder get a significant bump in days, up to 2,000.
Those three permits should each be allowed enough days to make a living.
Assembly member Margaret Friednauer brought up the fact that the original method of dividing up skier days was a lengthy process, which in part came down to capacity.
I mean, I would want to hear from industry, from TAB, from a whole lot of people and the public and other users about this, because I thought these regulations exist to try to manage land use and disagreements. And as we know, it's always a hot topic, but that is a precise reason I don't think we can just do some action on the assembly level with this without first spending a lot more time on it elsewhere.
Resident Tom Ely addressed the council and said enough is enough.
This issue has certainly had plenty of play. What Haines is known for now recently is three fatalities and two lousy winters of snow conditions. So that does not help the reputation of Haines when these things happen. The more people you throw into the mountains, the more accidents there are going to be.
Campbell said he hoped to have his proposed changes take effect for the 2017 season. He made a motion to send the idea to the Commerce Committee, but it failed to get a second and died. In Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is forecasting a pink salmon harvest of 34 million fish for Southeast Alaska next summer. That catch would be just below the 35 million caught in the region this year and would be below the 10-year average. It still falls in the strong category compared to commercial catches dating back to statehood. Andy Piston is Fish and Game's pink and chum salmon project leader for Southeast.
So while it's strong historically, you know, people hear that today, and it's a little below average for what, over the last couple of decades, what we'd expect.
The department produces the forecast each year based on the trend in harvest. That number is adjusted with data from NOAA Fisheries' annual trawl survey of outgoing juvenile pink salmon. A real unknown in forecasting pink salmon in the past 2 years has been the unusually warm ocean water temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska. Fish and Game has been receiving widespread reports of unusual species of fish showing up in the normally cold water off Alaska, from albacore tuna to squid, shad, sunfish, bonito, and pompano. The pink salmon that went into sea in 2014 were expected to return in big numbers this past summer, but fell far short of the forecast. Piston says one reason could be the warmer water fish.
You know, that could certainly add increased either competition for food, it could add increased predation, as well as affecting virtually everything else in a pink salmon's life cycle, from, you know, possibly their range to their you know, the biological processes going on in the fish, their metabolism, things like that.
Next year's pinks were leaving southeast streams in 2015 and likely ran into the same warm water conditions and southern fish species. In addition, recent even year returns in 2014 and 2012 have seen low numbers of pinks in the northern panhandle. Fish and Game expects that trend to continue next summer. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.